Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly mini-sode where we dig into the things that we've been watching and playing recently. I'm Terry.
And I'm Mary Beth. This week we are chatting about an analog horror game, an uncomfortable dissolution of a marriage, a queer slasher, and ooh, more erotic dentistry.
Yes. we got a range here, I would say, of things that we are discussing. So let's just dive right in. I want to hear about this analog horror game. I'm all about new horror games. So what is this?
Yeah, so this is Home Safety Hotline, a game that I have not been able to stop talking about since I heard about it.
Home Safety?
Yeah, Home Safety Hotline. And so the basic premise is... The log line, to me, a way to describe it, is basically an analog horror bestiary game where you play someone who works for a pest control company called Home Safety Hotline, and you answer calls and you tell people what are infesting their house. And each shift, you get more entries into your bestiary, essentially, and you start from, like, oh, bees, termites, ants, and then it goes to, like, hobgoblins and boggarts and fairy disease. And so it becomes this, like, really interesting, like, again, you're sitting at a desk answering questions for people, and it gets weirder and weirder and weirder as the game goes along. It's very short. It's about 3 hours, depending on how long it takes. But it's, okay, like, very much, again, it looks like you're on, like, a Windows 95 PC. It's, like,
the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's emulating that aesthetic, exactly. Perfect. And so, like, every time you log in for a shift, you have, like, emails you can look at. There's some weird videos that kind of give you some more world building. And then you're clocking in for your shift and getting calls and putting people on hold and reading through your bestiary, essentially, to figure out what is plaguing these people and giving them the right advice and how to fix it. And, yeah, it goes to some really, really bizarre places as it goes on, as it continues. And it's a PC game. It just got released a couple weeks ago, so it's kind of, like, not hot. I don't think it's talked about that much, but again, it's very analog horror, very my vibe, and very low-key in what it's doing. So if you're not, like, a big horror action game person, there's not, like, jump scares, and there's even options at the beginning if you have phobias, like if you're scared of spiders, if you're scared of certain bugs. You can check a box at the beginning and it'll blur out any of those images for you. So you can play it without being worried about it, which is nice. It's just, like, a nice little accessibility thing with people who have, like...
So I do want to circle onto that, because I have seen that more recently particularly with arachnophobia filters that so I don't have a problem necessarily with, like, CG, like, you know, things that aren't real. Like, my mind is able to, like, uncanny valley that, and I'm not scared about it. But there are a lot of games, like, there's Grounded, which is, like, sort of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids survival game in the backyard that has an arachnophobia mode. Even the new Harry Potter game has an arachnophobia mode. There's, like, it seems to be a lot more and more. There's Lethal Company, which is this new multiplayer game, has an arachnophobia mode. Like, so there's, like, that is happening a whole lot more. And as someone with arachnophobia, I'm very appreciative of that. It's such a nice accessibility feature.
Yeah, we just ran an interview on Dread Central, shameless plug, where Justin Wood talked to the developers. And they said, one of the guys said, yeah, my wife has arachnophobia so bad that if she even knew there was a spider in it, she wouldn't play it. So it made sense to add these filters, so if you really are that scared, like, you can still enjoy it and be warned about it and be entertained. Like, it's the whole point is to make sure you're having fun. So I love that. So yeah, it's not like super scary. It's the atmosphere and the vibe of it. Ask. You know what I mean? It's like kind of the unsettling vibes of it. And you're always playing with that interface. So it's not like, again, there's no jump scares, there's no combat. It's mostly kind of just putting things together like a puzzle game in a way. But so yeah, low key, but a good, and again, analog horror, very into that aesthetic. I'm a big analog horror kick right now, so there's not a lot of analog horror games-ish like that follow that. Yeah.
There's more coming out now. I think because of YouTube it's becoming more popular, but so I think we're starting to see a bit more, and so I'm curious to see how that's going to develop, because there's a lot of nostalgic games too with like PS1 era, nostalgia in terms of the blocky Resident Evil 1, Silent Hill 1 type of aesthetic. So I'm hoping that we're going to get some more of that.
Yeah, I think that definitely, but I think like especially with the popularity of like Mandela Catalog, the Backrooms, that kind of stuff, I'm seeing more of that in games, because it's an easier way to make horror games, I would think, because again, like with Home Safety Hotline, it's a lot of writing going on, but a lot of it is very like, there's not a lot of animation happening. A lot of it's very text based, and what analog horror, like really good analog horror, does is text based, but it uses some creepy images and sounds and everything. So I think
so, like found footage, it is a good way for those independent people to make a game.
So I have a whole theory about analog horror being the new era of found footage, because it's the digital sphere, and I think that this game is part of that, and how like we are now like analog horror is now like, as we saw with games like Outlast and things like with found footage kind of bridging into games, I think analog horror now is starting to bridge into games, and I think it kind of shows how this is a new era of this kind of specific horror that is very like aesthetically trying to emulate a very particular like nostalgia factor, but also play on the idea of it being real and feeling very real. Sorry, I'm on my high horse now. I just think it's like super interesting. I'm like planning out a column for Dread Central about all this, because I think it's like a super new, cool era of horror that I don't think people are paying a lot of attention to. But they should, because I think it's a really
And this is kind of my niche with horror too on video games. So like this, I am adding this to my list because this sounds really fucking fun.
It's like my dream job.
When you said it's short?
It's only a couple hours. It's not randomly generated, so like every time you play, for right now, it's not like procedurally generated in terms of like options. Every playthrough has the same calls right now. I don't have any idea if they're going to change that, but it'd be cool if they added that. But I know it's just like two guys, and it was a side project, so who knows. But yeah, so that is Home Safety Hotline. That is on PC currently.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Absolutely different. An uncomfortable dissolution of a marriage. Sounds fun.
So
just kidding.
An interesting dissolution of a marriage, because it involves murder or suicide or accidents or something. Who knows?
Ooh.
I am trying to get caught up on all of the best picture-esque type things for Gallica, for the critics group that Mary Beth and I both belong to, because it is due very soon, and I'm trying to get as many things in as I can. So I finally sat down this weekend and watched Anatomy of a Fall. Have you seen this one yet, Mary Beth?
No, and I need to, because it got nominated for a bunch of stuff, which is awesome,
as well as it should. This is a 2.5-hour movie, so it is long, but it is basically a courtroom drama for most of it. And this is a movie that opens up with Sandra Hüller, who is a phenomenal actress. I didn't realize this until I was looking up information about her, but she was actually I hadn't ever seen her, I don't think, in a movie before, except for Sleep. Do you remember that movie, Mary Beth? From Out of the Festivals. So she was in Sleep, and I was like, that's why she's familiar to me. So she's in two big big picture movies this year, Anatomy of Fall and Zone of Interest, that are getting a lot of buzz. And
she's in Zone of Interest too. Wait, did she?
Yeah, she is.
What did she get nominated for?
I don't actually know. See if you can find it. Okay, so Anatomy of a Fall opens with Sandra Hüller's Sandra. Sandra is her name in the movie. And she is being interviewed by a journalist. And because she and her husband are both writers. And as they're having this discussion, her husband is upstairs in this beautiful house. And he is installing insulation up in the attic. And he starts playing, weirdly enough, a rendition of Pimp by 50 Cent. Like, it is almost like a merengue, salsa-esque, no words version of the song Pimp by 50 Cent. And he starts playing it very loudly as this interviewer is trying to record the conversation that they're having. And it just keeps going on repeat to the point that Sandra's like, I guess we're going to have to call this off for the day. Sandra and her husband's son is blind. And you find out a little bit as to why he's blind a little bit later as the movie progresses. And he goes out with his service dog for a walk. And when he gets back, he finds out that his dad is dead in the snow outside of the house, a wound on his head. And it looks like he fell. And from there, it goes into sort of an investigation of, was it a homicide? Was it an accident? Was it suicide? And the wife ends up basically being on the stand because they think that she killed her husband. And it goes from there, and most of it is set in the courtroom as we are seeing the evidence for and against whether she murdered her husband. But there is one scene in this movie that is a flashback to an argument between the two of them, and it is like, I didn't clock it, but it is like a long extended sequence of just the two of them getting to the heart of the problems in their relationship. And it is the most uncomfortable sequence I have ever seen, but it also shows how fucking fantastic of an actress Sandra is. Like, it is
she did, in fact, get nominated for this for Best Actress.
Good. She deserves it. She deserves this award because I was gobsmacked at her performance in this. And she plays this character so incredibly well that you are not really sure whether you can trust what she's saying or whether what she's saying is she's just a person that happened to have something horrible happen to her. You don't quite know. And the movie toys with that for most of the movie. I don't want to give spoilers away, but this movie is fantastic. I was blown away because I thought it was gonna be kind of boring, particularly with the courtroom drama that's gonna last 2.5 hours, but I found it very enthralling. And that 10-minute scene between just her and her husband is some of the best acting I have seen in a movie all year.
Hell yeah. Okay, so I need to watch it. I really like, that's one my grandparents watched it, like, you need to see it. Like, I know.
It's really good.
I've seen so many memes, like, you like about, like, the, was it like the cunty lawyer or something in the movie, or like, I can't, like, I don't have much context other than like memes I've seen online, but also the dog is like getting a bunch of awards, which also is very cute.
Oh my god. But it's not for cute moments. That there is a moment involving the dog. Spoiler alert, if you don't want to know anything about the movie, I will say the dog does live, but there is a moment, whew, really bothered my roommate. So just as a warning, but the dog does live, but it is a harrowing moment. And yes, the dog should get an acting award for that moment. I was shocked at the performance, but yeah, it's intense. So all around, incredible film. Loved it. Still involving death, but I want to hear about this queer slasher.
Okay, so I got an email about this movie that I hadn't even heard of, called Departing Seniors. And
okay, I want to see this one.
Yeah, and so I was on the fence about it, and then I was like, you know what? No, it looks really good. It's directed by a woman, by Claire Cooney, and it stars it's about a gay Latino high school senior who is, you know, just days away from graduating, and he is out, and he is very confident and proud of his sexuality, but he's still bullied at school and given a lot of shit, and one of his bullies is this girl, a white girl, who is pissed off because she keeps calling him, like, affirmative action and being like, you're just getting attention. And so this kid is getting bullied, and in the background there's someone killing, like, jocks. And at one point, when Javier, who is the main character, is running away from his bullies, he trips and falls down the stairs, hits his head, and all of a sudden he has, like, this ability that when he touches things, he can see into the future of the person who last touched the object. And this leads to him realizing that the string of supposed teen suicides are actually murders, and they are being framed as suicides, and he and his friend Bianca, played by Rian Roach, who has been in, like, Knives and Skin by Jennifer Reeder. She was also in Candyman. So they're kind of trying to solve what's going on. And it's definitely a low-budget slasher, but I was really, really impressed by it. Because I think it's dealing with queerness in a really interesting way in the movie. Like, the character Javier, played by Ignacio Diaz Silverio, who is kind of a newer actor, he's out, but he's also kind of a dick because he has to have that kind of, like, protective armor. Everyone's kind of shitty to him, so he's a dick back. So he's got this, like, chaotic confidence about him, and you like him, but he's also kind of an asshole, and you're like, dude, come on. And so it portrays, like, the queer characters as being, you know, again, this nuance to them. It's not, like, they're not just getting
messiness,
slurs thrown at them. It's, like, more complicated and, like, sinister in terms of what homophobia looks like now. It's, like, not just, like, swirlies and pranks. It's, like, physical attacks and, like, sinister, like, texting and, like, setting people up. And I think it's a really, like, kind of, it's, like, it's both dark and kind of bleak and hopeful at the same time, because, like, it's ultimately a hopeful movie, but it's not afraid to go to these darker places when it comes to, like, queerness, especially as teenagers, and expectations, and, like, especially of men. And so it's, like, it's operating on a really fascinating, like, several fascinating levels. I think that the climax is a little bit, it's, like, a little bit anticlimactic in how it kind of, like, where it kind of builds to, but I still really enjoyed it, like, with the heart it has. I think a lot of films I've seen this year, like, between this and another movie that I cannot talk about until next week, have a lot of this, like, genuine heart to them, where, like, yes, it's not perfect, but you can tell how much both there's chemistry between all of the actors, and also that the person behind the camera gave a shit about what they were doing. So you can kind of forgive some of the messiness because of how genuine, like, you can feel the genuine place that it's coming from in terms of subject matter. Like, yes, it's like a horror comedy slasher, but it's also, like, a sad look at trying to grow up these days as just, like, a kid who's different in a much more honest way. Because I think, again, it's, like, it can be very sanitized nowadays, and this doesn't sanitize, like, teenager reality as much as a lot of other media has. So, yeah, I definitely would give it a watch. It's out February 2nd, so the day that this podcast is out, this episode is up, it is now out on VOD. So I would recommend it. I definitely would.
I got an email for it, and I was like, that sounds really good. And then I just haven't had time to request it. So I'm glad to hear it is good, because I watched the trailer. It's like, okay, I'm sold. I want to see this movie. So I'm glad it's good.
Yeah.
Love to see that.
Yeah.
And I love messy queers.
Yes.
As we all know.
So, yeah, I was super into it. So I'm glad it's one of those movies that I think can very easily get kind of swept under the rug. But yes, so that is Departing Seniors, out now as of the recording, as of the release of this podcast. And then finally, more erotic dentistry. I did not know we could get even more erotic dentistry, so I'm very excited to understand what you're about to tell me.
So if you've listened to our episode with Adam Caesar earlier this week, where we covered The Dentist, I did mention in there that after that, my journey from that film was like, I'm not sure about this one, to me and my roommate thinking, okay, we're going to have to watch Dentist 2, the movie that has a poster that has lived in infamy in my mind, as well as Mary Beth's mind, from what I understand from that recording. We sat down and watched The Dentist 2, which is a continuation, a direct continuation of The Dentist, where it picks up with everyone's favorite psychotic dentist, Dr. Finestone, in a asylum. And somehow, I'm not quite sure how this got through all of the nurses that watch him, but he has sutured a sharpened weapon into his calf, and during a patient interview with the doctor, where he is talking about how he sees two sides of him and there's this dark side, and you know, he's trying to fight it, he ends up ripping out his stitches, takes the weapon, and takes her hostage. Unsure what happens to her. I guess she probably dies, because then he's out of the hospital and on the run to Paradise, Missouri, where he apparently, pre going to prison, has established that as like one of his safety deposit boxes and a whole new identity. So we'll go with that. But meanwhile, as this is happening, Brooke, who you all remember as his wife from the first movie, who has her teeth taken out and her tongue cut off, returns and has hired a private detective to track down her ex-husband. And all they have to go on is a bunch of postcards that they've visited from around the country. Eventually, you know, their paths are going to cross, but I will say that Brooke is giving so much intense eye acting, because she doesn't speak, she doesn't open her mouth, probably because they didn't want to have to like put fake teeth in her. So she has her mouth closed and she does a lot of intense eye stares for listeners that are not watching what I am doing.
Just the heavy breathing.
just intenseness. And so he is opening, he ends up killing the dentist in this small town because the dentist is terrible and puts on a cap that ends up falling off as he is leaving the dentist. So he ends up killing him. And then because he's the dentist and it's a small town, they end up hiring him as the town dentist to replace the dentist. Sure. And then he finds this girl named Jamie who looks somewhat like his wife. And so he starts having flashbacks to his wife and eventually goes off the deep end again and starts the murderous spree. It's a very conventional movie, whereas the first one didn't feel very conventional. This feels like a movie in a way. And
not like a weird fucking Dirty Fever dream.
Yeah. And it kind of lacks some of the energy of the first movie in some ways, because it is not as condensed. It is like has like multiple locations. It's not filmed in like pretty much one set for most of the film. So it sort of loses that feeling of the first movie. But at the same time, I thought it was kind of interesting. A little slow in spot. There's some really funny moments. There's this particular moment where he is performing dental care on a woman who, while Jamie, his new love interest, is in the room, and he knows that she is has this man in her life and he is really feeling jealous, and you could tell the woman in the chair knows that he is like, he is fucking with my teeth while he is having this potential breakdown, and she is doing everything in her power to like calm him down through her mouth being pried open and her eyes. And it's a very kind of funny scene. Also, Nadine from Twin Peaks is in this.
Hell yeah.
Which is, I was like, why does she look so familiar? And it's Nadine, or if you want, the woman from The People Under the Stairs, same actress, is in this movie. So that's really great. It's fun. It's a little slow.
Okay.
I think I prefer the first one just because of the manic, weird imagery of the first one to this one. But you know what? As a direct-to-HBO sequel to a very seedy movie, it's not bad. It's not bad.
Does it match the vibes of the cover?
There is, so I was like, when is this scene going to happen? And there is one moment that is very Brian Usna. It's a dream sequence in which a woman has those teeth and also a very long tongue. Very phallic long tongue. And I was like, oh, this is giving society. This is giving Brian Usna. And I wish there was more of that. It's just one little brief moment in the film. But it does not live up to that cover. But that moment is there. It's in the film.
That about does it for this week's Little Cuts. But Terry, who are we talking to on Monday?
So on Monday, we are so excited. We got to chat with Jude Ellison S. Doyle, who is the writer of Dead Blondes and Bad Mothers, Monstrosity, Patriarchy, and the Fear of Female Power. And his latest is the folk horror comic book, The Neighbors, which he gave us the first three issues. It's a 5-issue comic. He gave us the first three issues. We both read it and wanted more. And so I immediately bought it on Kindle. And Mary Beth has bought it since then. At the comic book store.
I bought it at a comic book store, my favorite place. Yep.
A lot of fun. Really good. And he brought with him Unsolved Mysteries, Season 2, Episode 2, particularly about the blinking crucifix. And what a wild, fun conversation. And a bit of nostalgia for me, who grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries. So get ready for that. If you want to watch it and kind of familiarize with yourself, a lot of them are streaming legally on YouTube, in particular this episode. So Season 2, Episode 2, if you want to find out about a realtor getting shot, a blinking crucifix, and a nudist colony fraud, go watch that 40-minute episode and get ready to get weird.
Hell yeah. So listeners, you've heard from us, you want to hear from you. Did you play anything or watch anything that we talked about this week and have thoughts? Do you have ideas and thoughts about things we should be covering? You can let us know by sending us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. I am at mbmcandrews on Twitter and at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful everywhere.
And, of course, if you're not following the podcast, what are you doing? Make sure to follow it on Twitter and Blue Sky at Scarred Podcast and on Instagram at Scarred for Life Podcast.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And if you want to see our beautiful faces or my interpretive eye acting, you can support us through Patreon and watch our mugs do weird things.
Woo.
Or something.
Thank you to... Thank you to Eric Power for artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there, but most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.